In the Wampanoag Confederation, one of these Quicksilver communities was Patuxet, where Tisquantum was born at the end of the 16th century. Tucked into the great sweep of Cape Cod Bay, Patuxet sat on a low rise above a small harbor, jigsawed by sandbars, and shallow enough that children could walk from the beach hundreds of yards into the water before the waves went above their heads. To the west, maize hills marched across the sandy hillocks in parallel rows. Beyond the fields, a mile or more away from the sea, rose a forest of oak, chestnut, and hickory, open and park-like, the underbrush kept down by expert annual burning. Pleasant of air and prospect, as one English visitor described the area, Patuxet had much plenty both of fish and fowl every day in the year. Tisquantum's childhood witu, home, was formed from arched poles lashed together into a dome that was covered in winter by tightly woven rush mats and in summer by thin sheets of chestnut bark. A fire burned constantly in the center, the smoke venting through a hole in the center of the roof. English visitors did not find this arrangement peculiar. Chimneys were just coming into use in Britain, and most homes there, including those of the wealthy, were still heated by fires beneath central roof holes. Nor did the English regard the Donland Witu as primitive. Its multiple layers of mats, which trapped insulating layers of air, were warmer than our English houses, sighed the colonist William Wood. The Witu was less leaky than the typical English wattle and daub house, too. Wood did not conceal his admiration for the way Indian mats deny entrance to any drop of rain, though it come both fierce and long. Around the edge of the house were low beds, sometimes wide enough for a whole family to sprawl on them together, usually raised about a foot from the floor, platform style, and always piled with mats and furs. Going to sleep in the firelight, young Tisquantum would have stared up at the dithering shadows of the hemp bags and bark boxes hanging from the rafters. Voices would skirl up in the darkness, one person singing a lullaby, then another person, until everyone was asleep. In the morning, when he woke, big egg-shaped pots of corn and bean mash would be on the fire, simmering with meat, vegetables, or dried fish, to make a slow-cooked dinner stew. Outside the Witu, he would hear the cheerful thuds of the large mortars and pestles in which women crush dried maize into no-cake, a flour-like powder so sweet, toothsome, and hearty, colonist Gookin wrote, that an Indian will travel many days with no other but this meal. Although Europeans bemoaned the lack of salt in Indian cuisine, they thought it nourishing. According to one modern reconstruction, Donland diets at the time averaged about 2,500 calories a day, better than those usual in famine-racked Europe. Pilgrim writers universally reported that Wampanoag families were close and loving, more so than English families, some thought. Europeans in those days tended to view children as moving straight from infancy to adulthood around the age of 7, and often thereupon sent them out to work. Indian parents, by contrast, regarded the years before puberty as a time of playful development and kept their offspring close by until marriage.